Thanks for being with us. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty. Don't be scared, no monsters. Matt Ravis is here. The show is busting at the seams. Lots of NBA, lots of NFL, lots of college football talk, as always. And let's start with that game last night. Monday Night Football and the Los Angeles Rams defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Rams now an excellent chance after it looked like a little bit dicey for them middle part of the season to work their way into the playoffs after in what is a really, really difficult division. Tampa Bay has a couple of tough ones next couple of weeks, but just based on sheer numbers of things in the NFC, I think they probably still get in. The worrisome part for them is their performance against elite talent. Obviously, they have the transcendent game against Green Bay, where everything that that they did went well on both sides of the football. But Chicago at the time was better, 500 now, and the Saints, they haven't looked good. Now they take on the Rams, and this is a game that went down to the wire, but still looked bad in the way that this finished. Egregious interception by Tom Brady, that's going to stand out, but really couldn't get anything going on the ground, really couldn't get anything going through the air as well. When you throw it almost 50 times and go for 200 yards, just incrementally, they were able to stick in this game, had a big second quarter, but the Rams, it seems weird to say when you kick field goal 2 minutes left to go, but they were in control of bigger portions of this game than the Buccaneers were. Your thoughts on where Tampa Bay is right now and where LA is right now?
Number one, anytime Tom Brady can puke down his leg in a primetime spot, that's something that I'm going to enjoy. Number two, I had fantasy implications on the line, so that final interception tied up a game for me that Tom Brady threw. I thought it was over. Then he throws that INT. Now it's tied, and tiebreaker goes to the ultimate in I's fantasy team. So that's very exciting as well. But Buccaneers have some things to figure out. They play the Chiefs next week. Chiefs defensively have some things to figure out as well. So that should be an interesting matchup. But this Rams team, Sean McVay is still a really good coach. I know that people were down on the Rams going into this year, but he's never had a losing season, and they are extremely talented.
Now, the good news for Buccaneers fans is it will be dark at the end of that game, but it's not technically going to happen in prime time.
Right. No, that is good news.
Bears and Packers is the Sunday night game, and then Seahawks and Eagles is your Monday night football game. But, yeah, against Kansas City. And the game is in Tampa Bay, and this could really change the perception of them if they were to beat the Chiefs. I mean, there's no question about that. I don't think anybody is truly down on Tampa Bay as far as what they are and what they are capable of, being a dangerous team in the NFL, in the NFC playoffs. But not the favorite. They're just not as complete a team as some of these others that they'll be facing. Although, of course, the NFC is a little bit more open than perhaps the AFC will be with the Steelers and Chiefs, the juggernaut that they are.
That's not the way they wanted it to go, though. I mean, you're looking at the division before the week, Gideon, and you're like, okay, Gideon or Drew Brees has about 20 broken ribs. I don't know what the actual number is, but he is all beat up. They're starting Taysom Hill, a guy who completed 60% of his passes in college at BYU. Not a great thrower of the ball, but they find a way to win. And now the Bucs are looking at maybe a wild card spot in the playoffs. Kind of too early to tell, but that's what I would guess as of right now.
What's you heard us talking a little bit earlier about the college football rankings. Initial rankings are going to come out a little bit earlier today, and some of these I think we expect, but the wild cards are where's Northwestern end up as a Power 5 unbeaten team with an opportunity to run the table now. It is astonishing to look at some of those schedules and see who teams are playing and who are not playing this year. And, man, there are some, I mean, there are some yellow brick roads for a number of these teams that are closing in on the top 10. Where do you think teams like Cincinnati, BYU will be tonight? What's going to be the big story line coming out of today outside of the top four?
We know that the committee loves controversy, and it definitely benefits them. So I would like
to do it just to generate buzz.
Yeah, no, I know.
What about the legitimacy of the committee?
They would never do such a thing. But Gideon, it's funny how these things always have a way of working themselves out, no matter what happens this early in the schedule or this early in the year when the rankings are first released. So personally, I would like to see Cincinnati up there. I mean, just eye test. That's a really, really good team. BYU, mm-hmm. I think a little bit less of them, but I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what they do.
How could the thing that I don't want to see is you look at the coaches poll this week and Florida's ahead of A&M. And I mean, they played each other. A&M won. What is, you can't
yeah,
see.
It doesn't stuff. Matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you can't see stuff like that. Yeah, Cincinnati, BYU will be, Miami's interesting. Northwestern is 11, the AP 13, and the coaches, I think they're going to be a lot higher. I think people just look out and see, you know, you remember the Reese Davis's thing. I think people look out and see those athletes. Now you wonder how good Wisconsin was, even though you can only play who's on your schedule. And that's going to be the best team that they can beat until they get to the Big Ten championship game. Think OU's right somewhere mid-teens. Not that matters. They're not going to jump all the way up into four, even if there's some kind of cataclysmic event this year. And keep in mind, this is coming from somebody for the last 12 years. Whenever they lose, don't worry, they're going to get in. But this year, they just lost two games. There's too many teams in front of them that are playing easier competition or already have their hard games out of the way. But you think mid-teens tonight, something like that?
That would be about right. And I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely, to say the least, a lot of things would have to break their way for that to happen. But yeah, no, I think that'd be about right.
Yeah, a lot of things have to break their way every year for them to get in, and they always do. But there's a little bit too much more with that second loss here this year. We got so much stuff to get to. Time the show is just jam packed. What did you think about the Adams extension? Because the number. This, I don't know. It surprised me a little bit that it was that high. I think by the end of 2 years, you're going to start to see him, even though we think Steven is, you know, this big, burly 35-year-old man. He's still a younger guy in this league, just reaching his prime. But the style in which he plays, you don't know how conducive that's going to be to the modern NBA game. You don't know where his body is going to bring at. So I think that's a good deal in terms of the numbers if the Pelicans view him as a piece that can help these young guys develop and get them shots, certainly. But $35 million. I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah, no, I continue to be surprised by the amount of money that's thrown around. And usually the money that we've seen thrown around in this free agency is the guys who can shoot the ball. Guys who can't shoot the ball have taken a heavy discount. Then you look at a guy like Montrezl Harrell.
Yep.
Hey, that's who I'm thinking of. So yeah, that was a little bit surprising, but he's so good for culture, Gideon. I mean, we've seen that firsthand here in OKC. He's just going to bring a toughness to your team, no nonsense sort of attitude, at least on the floor. Obviously, he's great in a media sort of setting, which is, that's good to have around as well. So I can see why they did it.
Less than a month away from the first regular season game, and obviously they'll have camp and they'll have preseason, so we're just a couple of weeks away from really, really getting things tipped off with the NBA. Dallas fans, Cowboys had to cancel practice for a medical emergency. It was not related to COVID-19, so that's the good news. Looks like we're going to get a game there this weekend, and we've got a bunch of stuff to get to during this show, headlines and otherwise. Kyle Boone's going to join us here in just a few minutes from CBS. Does a great job covering the NBA draft. Also does some work for Pistols Firing, so I'll ask him a question or two about OSU. I will ask a lot of OSU questions to Scott Wright at 1 o'clock from the Oklahoman. He's the beat writer for the Cowboys for the Oklahoman. Jason Kersey, OU fans, don't worry. Your Sooner content is coming at 1:20. He'll offer his thoughts on Bedlam and OU football moving forward as they are now one of the favorites to get to the Big 12 championship. I guess shouldn't say the clear favorite, since Iowa State controls their destiny and could potentially have the best conference record headed into the game. But certainly, OU has the inside track to get there. And then Eric Horn, kind enough to change around his schedule today. He's going to join us later in the show to talk a little bit more Thunder basketball and the NBA. So we have all that to look forward to on today's show, that and a lot more. We'll try to fit in your phone calls at some point as well. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark Rogers and Dusty Dvorak. Matt Ravis here as well. Kyle Boone up next. You're listening to the Monsters of Midday, 98.1 FM. WWLS, the sports animal.
Score for a Ford.
You've got NBA coming up a little bit later on. College football, of course. OU and OSU. We'll get into all of that, so stick around here on 98.1 FM. Joining us now, one of our good friends, Kyle Boone, does a great job covering the NBA, specifically the NBA draft for CBS Sports. We'll talk a little OSU with him begrudgingly later in the show. Kyle, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Gideon. Thanks for having me on.
So how can the Thunder use such poor judgment as to bring in a guy that's going to rock jorts, a tropical sweatshirt, and a fanny pack?
Listen, I don't want to hear any Alexei Pokusevski slander. This is my guy. He was my draft darling, and I am thrilled that the Thunder are taking a chance on him. I think he's awesome.
What was your read on him initially in the draft? Because we saw a lot of mocks that were, you know, mid-20s, and then obviously he started to rise a little bit as we got closer to the draft. Evaluation's been so much more difficult this season because of the pandemic. But what can you tell us about his strengths, what people say about him overseas anyway, and his track record there?
Yeah, people really liked what they saw from Pokusevski. The problem was not a lot of people got to see him. You watch the tape on him, and it's like a mom in the stands trying to videotape him. Like the film quality wasn't great.
Yeah.
And then you add on top of that the fact that the competition he faced wasn't super great either. And so you're trying to scout based off of context, based off of who he's playing against. And you look at him, and he's 7 foot. He can dribble it like a guard. He can shoot it like a wing. He can put the ball on the floor and create offense, and he can shoot it from outside the paint. And so there's a lot of physical tools that obviously people really liked about him. I had a scout maybe a few months ago tell me that they thought he was a top 10 player in this draft class. And as the draft approaches, I'm sure people probably have seen this or some iteration of this, but the Thunder were pretty linked with Pokusevski. There was a lot of chatter that they really liked him, and I actually had him mocked in my final mock draft with one of their last picks in the first round. So I was not surprised necessarily that the Thunder took a gamble on him. I think he kind of fits, you know, what Sam Presti values, which is kind of length and upside and a chance to be potentially one of the best players in this draft class. So, yeah, again, I was thrilled. You're talking to a guy who was a Pokusevski stan for a very long time, and I think it's a really interesting pick.
Okay, well, you got in on the ground floor. You know anything about Maladon? I mean, we saw the video package, and it's all about Tony Parker and not really about him. Do you know anything about his perceived upside?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot of perceived upside there. In fact, I think that was kind of the knock on why he may have slipped a little bit. He's a very high floor combo guard who can create with the ball in his hands. He's not super athletic, so you're not talking about a guy who I don't think can be an all-star. But you know, you've already got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right? You're adding Theo Maledon essentially as an off-ball guard who can create. Maybe as, you know, your sixth man or the guy who can run your second unit. So his shot has improved over the last year or so, and there's a lot of hope that, you know, in time he can play on or off the ball and has the ball handling skills to do that, I think. So another pick that I thought was very, very solid, and they get him at a good spot in the first round.
Will teams rue the day that they passed on Denny Avdija and Obi Toppin?
You know, with Denny Avdija, I think yes. He ended up slipping to number 9. I thought that he was going to go number 4 to the Bulls. So
yeah, he looks ready to me.
He does, yeah. Physically, he's really matured over the last year. Ended up falling to the Wizards at number 9, and the Wizards doing something right just stunned me on draft night. But, you know, he's a combo forward who can put it on the floor and has some shooting ability. So, yeah, he's a guy who I think could be a top 5 player in this draft class. Obi Toppin is an interesting one. He falls to the Knicks, right? And I thought the Knicks would go point guard or try to prioritize point guard. They just take kind of who they thought was their best player available. I like Obi Toppin as an NBA player. I think he'll be very productive. But, you know, New York clearly needs offensive initiators. Obi Toppin is not that. He's decidedly not that. He's a guy who can create a little bit off the bounce, but mostly he's a guy who's very athletic. He knows how to dunk, right? He led college basketball in dunks last season. Yeah. And he can step out and shoot threes. And I think he's kind of a modern-day NBA big man. But the Knicks still have problems at point guard position, and we'll see kind of if they can address that. But, you know, it felt like a very Knicks pick because there was other options on the board that I thought they probably should have taken. You know, with that being said, I don't think Obi Toppin is going to be a bust, so I guess he could have done worse.
Yeah. What's Nesmith is a guy that when you heard the Thunder were trading up, you thought, well, you know, maybe that's one of the guys that they're looking at there. Is there somebody that was lower into the lottery, just outside the lottery a little bit, that didn't necessarily get a lot of attention that you think people will be talking about a lot this year?
I think so. And Nesmith was one of my favorite prospects. And in fact, I had him, I think, as a lottery pick in this draft.
Yes.
And he ended up going number 14. You're talking about a guy who was one of the best three-point shooters in college basketball last season. He only played 14 games and had a season-ending injury. I think there was a little bit of concern over that injury and if it would linger and exactly what some of the stuff that teams were getting back medically on him. I think there was a little bit of concern, and maybe that forced him to slip. But you're talking about a guy who shot above 50% from three last season as the number one option on a pretty bad Vanderbilt team. But, you know, he's 6'6". He's got great positional size. Really the modern-day perfect combo wing who can create and score it from deep. So I would have loved to see the Thunder go and get this guy because, you know, it feels like for years now, right, the Thunder have just been missing a guy who is just a dead-eye shooter who can knock down threes and space the floor. Next to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think that's really important. So we'll see. He's a guy who I would have loved to see the Thunder get, but obviously at number 14, that was just a little bit too rich for OKC.
We're talking with Kyle Boone, does a great job with the NBA draft, covering the NBA in general for CBS. I know this is a difficult question because of the lack of sample size, but was there somebody that came along that you were like, whoa, that seems like a little bit of a reach?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was Jalen Smith who ended up going to the Suns. I believe it was at number 10 or 11, and I had heard that Jalen Smith might end up slipping to the second round, or at least into the mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
And it was shocking because the Suns did that, but shocking even more so because the Suns did almost this exact thing last year. They took Cam Johnson.
That's right.
Inside the lottery last year, and he was a guy who the medicals were really concerning. People thought that he was going to slip to the second round. They end up taking with a lottery pick. So, you know, Jalen Smith, I think he's going to be a really good player in the NBA, kind of similar to Obi Toppin. He's not going to be a total bust. But you're talking about a 7-foot big man who can't create offense. He's kind of limited with his mobility. He can step out and shoot the three, and I think that's great. He can defend the rim. But that high in the draft, I think people in the draft community were pretty stunned that the Phoenix Suns went ahead and took him that high in this draft.
Overall, with the absence of just a transcendent name like a Zion Williamson or these surefire type guys, even though I think there's going to be some excellent professionals in this draft, do you think this has an opportunity to be one that we look back 4 or 5 years from now and go, that was okay? Or do you think it has the potential to be like, wow, there were a lot of guys top to bottom that turned out to be all-star caliber type guys?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more of the former, more of the
okay
draft. It wasn't great, but I think there's a lot of depth in this class. Even in like the lottery, you're getting Aaron Nesmith at number 14. He's a guy who I think is going to be a contributor in the NBA right away. But there's not a superstar, at least not a surefire superstar in this draft. And I think that's mostly how we evaluate draft classes, is how good is the best player?
Yeah.
The best player in this draft would have gone like number 6 if it was next year's draft. So it's very short on star power.
Gotcha.
And so in a few years, I think we'll look back and say, oh, wow, you know, there's a chance that, you know, the number 7 pick in this draft ended up as the best player. There's not a sure thing in this draft, and I think that was a big turnoff for some teams, obviously, who were picking in the lottery.
And now the journey all starts again as college basketball season, is scheduled to begin tomorrow, and we can't even play high school games around here, and obviously a lot more goes into travel schedule and things like that with college basketball. You got a lot more moving parts and pieces, and we're already starting to see cancellations, postponements, things like that. How difficult is this going to be logistically for college basketball to have a successful few weeks to open up here when the country's kind of heading the wrong way, so to speak?
It's a complete nightmare right now with college basketball. I think that'd be the only word I could use to describe it. Teams this week have been pulling out of events left and right. Baylor, the number 2 team in the preseason, just had its coach, Scott Drew, test positive for COVID, and Baylor, as a result, had to pull out of its preseason or its first event of the season, the Empire Classic. So that event is kind of up in the air right now. They're trying to make do on the fly. Jimmy V Classic with Tennessee, a team that's ranked inside the top 15, is looking like Tennessee is going to be out of that because their head coach tested positive. So you're talking about players, coaches, staffers who are all trying to deal with this. it's going to be a nightmare for the next few months. And I don't think it's going to get too much better. Eventually they'll figure something out, but you know, you're talking about teams traveling all over the country to try and make games happen. There's going to be cases come up. There's going to be cancellations. There's going to be postponements. And it's going to be a lot of stop and start, and hopefully we can just make it to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be nice. Kyle Boone's our guest. We got Kyle for just a couple more minutes here. Not only does a great job covering the NBA and the NBA draft and college basketball for CBS, also does some great work for a terrific site, Pistols Firing Blog, which I think is one of the essential OSU news sites out there. Your thoughts on Bedlam, you understand the emotion coming out of that, particularly it seemed like the decision to punt on fourth down seemed to be kind of a quote-unquote last straw for a lot of fans, and it caught up in the emotion of that moment, but after so much it has been piling up over the years with the futility against OU, and I understand that a lot of other teams have a similar experience with that, but it just hits closer to home because of the in-state rivalry between the two teams. I wondered what your thoughts were on that game and the very visceral reaction that occurred thereafter.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I think it's just a compounding of issues, right? Because Oklahoma State, you know, it felt like if this isn't the year to beat OU, when is it, right? Yeah. Because they came into this game off of a bye week. They were getting a lot more healthy. OU was apparently having some COVID concerns coming into this game, and you think, okay, OU's not having a great season. OSU's having a pretty good season outside the Texas game. They've played fairly well, you know, and then obviously to start the game off in a 21-0 hole, that I think OSU fans, that just rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah.
And when you have so much time to prepare for the most important game of the season and come out looking that flat, you know, whether it's the injuries, whether it's, you know, players not performing up to standards, I think that all falls back on Mike Gundy. And so that's, you know, that is probably the visceral reaction you're getting. And then during the game, when you get OSU punting down, you know, double digits and the game is basically over and you need some sort of spark, you're punting on fourth down knowing that you're essentially punting the game away.
Yeah.
That is kind of the nail in the coffin. So it was a really bad game for Oklahoma State from basically start to finish. Credit to Gundy. You know, he took credit, said, you know, this was on the coaching staff. We didn't put our players in position to win this game, and that's on us. You know, you don't want to hear that. It's good that they're taking responsibility for it, but yeah, I mean, you're paying a guy a couple million dollars a year to essentially lose every single Bedlam game, all but two since he's been head coach. It's certainly disheartening if you're an Oklahoma State fan.
Yeah, still an opportunity, albeit an unlikely one. A lot of things would have to fall their way to get the Big 12 championship. So Cowboys have to win out and hope to get a little help, but still a sliver of hope there. Kyle, we always appreciate your insight, your perspective on everything. Great job with the draft this year. Look forward to your work this upcoming season as well, and hopefully we get a chance to catch up with you again soon. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Appreciate it, Gidden. It's good talking with you.
All right. See ya. Kyle Boone there from CBS Sports and also Pistols Firing Blog. Matt, the college basketball season, this is going to be really hard to keep track of. It's certainly not going to help to grow the game the way that it really needs to right now with things sliding over the last several seasons. Fans, you know, find it tough to get used to their program, their stars, when these guys leave after a year. So, I don't know what else can be done other than, you know, delaying the start. But these teams and programs and schools made a decision a long time ago. They're going to try to give this a run at the worst possible time, and they're going to have to deal with the inconveniences of having to postpone games left and right.
It's going to be like what we deal with in college football every week, but magnified. I mean, it's very much going to be a thing where the game is not played until the ball tips off. Up until that point, very well could get called off. So it's going to be different. And like you said, it's just been an awful product these last few years. So college basketball is in a really tough spot.
Yeah. They're going to be able to weather this. They'll obviously get some guys coming in because I think it's still going to be a couple of years before high school eligible players will be able to go to the NBA, or they're going to make it two and done, whatever they're going to do. So one and done is still going to be a thing here for the next couple of seasons. A lot of intriguing players, including here in the state of Oklahoma this season. But we'll see how much we're able to get in. And this might be a situation where things are going to be tough here for a while, and then things might clear up a little bit later in the season. Hopefully that is the case for the NCAA tournament, at least. Got a lot of stuff to do. Score for a Ford is coming up here in just a little bit. Matt Ravis, a few minutes from now, is going to tell you how you could win a Ford F-250. So you want to be sure to stay tuned for that. Coming up here again in just a few minutes. Scott Wright's going to join us talking some more OSU football from the Oklahoman. Sooner fans, we didn't leave you out. Jason Kersey from The Athletic is going to join us in less than an hour or so, so be sure to stay tuned. Eric Horn is also going to be on this program today talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, who is on the team right now and who still is subject to change. And we'll get all that and a lot more with Eric. We'll take your phone calls to Gideon Hamilton, Matt Ravis. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday right here on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
This is Matt Pinto. Check out the latest edition of...
I'm here with you today. Matt Ravis is with us as well. Coming up here in about 15 minutes, Scott Wright is going to join us from the Oklahoman. Talk OSU. Jason Kersey will be soon thereafter talking OU football from The Athletic. And then Eric Horn's going to join us later in the show, talk about the NBA, specifically Thunder basketball. Gosh, a lot of stuff going on today that we can talk about with you. The Hall of Fame semifinalists are out for the NFL, and there you'll find Peyton Manning, of course, who's a shoe-in, Charles Woodson, who is as well, Calvin Johnson is there, and then some guys who are sort of on the edge, guys that have been around for a while, and some new names that I don't know necessarily if this year is going to be their year. This is going to be the year that, you know, Peyton Manning is basically inducted into the Hall of Fame.
I would love to know if there's someone, like literally anybody out there who's against Peyton Manning getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that would be the one where if it happened in Major League Baseball 10 years ago, you would know that there'd be one or two guys that wouldn't vote for him because you know, Sandy Koufax wasn't right. Unanimous, or Tom Seaver right. Wasn't unanimous or whatever. But no, the NFL, I don't necessarily see that happening. I think Peyton is going to be just fine, mm-hmm. and I think he would have been fine even if he didn't win that second Super Bowl with Denver. But obviously, the guy's legacy speaks for itself. We've got a lot of stuff to get into a little bit later on in the show. I brought up that Steven Adams contract with New Orleans, 2-year extension for $35 million. We also had the comments from Kelly Oubre, who was talking about, I guess, because he's played for other teams,
yeah.
But I specifically probably talking about Phoenix, where he was introduced as a new member of the Golden State Warriors. Kelly, I don't even think he had a cup of coffee in Oklahoma City. I don't know if he even touched down here, but he was a member of the team enough to get his jersey photoshopped on him.
I bought my jersey. I bought my Kelly Oubre jersey. I was so excited.
But he was asked about... being able to play for a stable organization. So if I can play for an owner, somebody who actually cares about the organization and not just the perception of the organization on the media end of it, it's all about the foundation for me, man. You have a beautiful foundation and you can build a beautiful future here. Do you view this as too much of a panic move based on what they had to pay in luxury tax to bring in somebody on the wing to make up for the production that they're going to lose with Klay Thompson? Or is it something that, hey, we really thought we were going to compete this year with Klay out. We need somebody who's going to help us be able to potentially do that.
Yeah, that's a great question. By the way, that was that's very passive aggressive there from Kelly Oubre. I obviously talk about the Sarvers in Phoenix. There's about six teams in the West, Gideon, that I would list ahead of the Warriors right now. I think about six or seven, and that's not even including a team like Phoenix, where Chris Paul, we've seen what he can do. He could certainly change their fortune. So I just don't know that Kelly Oubre is what gets you over the hump. He's a fine player. He's good offensively. He's really good and versatile defensively. They've got a bunch of dudes with really long wingspans. Just line those guys up with Steph Curry, that's going to be a lot of fun. But I just don't know how winning they're going to be.
The game changer for me, and I'm not potentially sold on. I thought, depending on who they drafted, they could be really, really good this year with Clay back, and maybe not as good as the Lakers based on the moves that they made in the offseason. I think they did get marginally better. The question for me on the Lakers, as everybody knows, is can LeBron stay healthy? Can especially Anthony Davis stay healthy? And now that those guys have won a championship together, what's their motivation like? I would assume it'd still be very high. You know, I trust those guys in that regard. Yeah. I don't trust them on not getting hurt, especially Anthony Davis. But the thing for me, the Warriors, is what's Wiseman look like? And if Wiseman is a guy that can have success in the NBA and can not be dominant, but have enjoy some mismatches and take advantage of those on a routine basis, then I think Golden State's going to be pretty good. I don't know. Now, he could go out there and get 12-7 and be fine and, you know, help them win some games. But if he's a guy that can take advantage of their floor spacing and score a lot down low, I don't like his shot. But if he's just a rim runner and guys are so concerned that they stick around with, you know, Kelly Oubre or whoever, then I think he'll have an opportunity to be pretty effective for them. But yeah, I don't know where I would put them. I don't know where I would put Dallas in the grand scheme of things. That's another question mark to me. I don't know where I would put Utah. Do I think all these teams are going to make the playoffs? Yes. But I don't know who's, you could get a sense of in years past, okay, it looks like this team's going to take the next step. Because they got hot last year. They brought in so-and-so. The last year it was Utah. Well, now they got the same group, and they got Bogdanovich. And so they're obviously going to move up.
Portland, too. Portland had a great offseason. They're going to be in there.
Yeah. So you think that's going to be the team that you think takes a step forward? They would have to if they don't get severely injured the way that they did a season ago. You would think Portland would be much better. What I'm saying is I don't know if I can identify that team as Phoenix going to be better than they were last year. Yeah.
Should be.
Probably. Remember, they had to win 8 in a row to get to 5 games under 500 at the end of the season. But are the Spurs, Kings, are the Pelicans going to be better than they were this year? Probably. Are the Timberwolves going to be better than they were this year? Yeah, probably, if they can stay healthy. But I don't know who that team is where you're like, yeah, they're next. And you think that team is Portland?
I like what they've had, the offseason they've had. They've had a tremendous offseason. They just keep getting guys. I love the Harry Giles pickup, the Melo pickup, that he's going to stay and be in his same role. Robert Covington, really, really underrated player, I think. So I love what Portland did.
Yeah. Coming up here in just a few minutes during this upcoming break, Matt Ravis is going to tell you how you can win a Ford F-250, score for a Ford, as you'll be able to offer a score prediction for the Oklahoma and West Virginia game coming up this weekend. Any preliminary thoughts on that game? Certainly OU is the more talented team. Turnovers can neutralize some things, but I think they'd have to make some egregious errors for West Virginia to hang around with them. And, yeah. and West Virginia's not bad team either.
They're not bad, but still haven't beaten OU in the Big 12. So that's still something that hasn't happened. So they're defensively talented enough, maybe to make things difficult on Spencer Rattler. But the only way I see OU letting down is if they just completely overlook this game.
Yeah. What about Texas and Iowa State this weekend? We'll talk a lot about this game as the week moves forward, with the exception of Thursday, obviously, and a happy Thanksgiving early to folks out there. Please be safe. But that's going to be a game on Friday. It'll be going on while we're on the air. Kind of the pivotal moments of that game will be going on. Any preliminary thoughts on that game between the Longhorns and the Cyclones?
Yeah, Longhorns looking a lot better than they did earlier in the season. We were kind of burying them, and now they all of a sudden have won three straight. So that will be interesting to be watching that game on Friday. Gonna have to play well in all facets of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. Gonna have to get some breaks go their way to beat Iowa State.
Yeah, Iowa State wins that game. They would have to avoid an upset against West Virginia. The Mountaineers are Oklahoma State's best friend, potentially, over the next couple of weeks, because they could hand defeats to, respectively, OU and Iowa State, as unlikely as those might be. Iowa State wins this weekend. They're obviously in tremendous shape. Just need to win over the Mountaineers, and they are in that Big 12 championship game. Matt Campbell, in high regard, says, hey, I can stick around here, build a contending type team, a conference championship type of team, and this might be the year that he's able to prove that. I doubt it. I think OU's going to win. I think they're going to win comfortably against anybody that they play in the Big 12 championship game, but that would be, what an achievement that would be for Matt Campbell.
It would be. I'm just interested to see what version of Brock Purdy we get. Because I think he's a good quarterback, but it's his inconsistency, right, Gideon? That's what makes him kind of in that second tier of quarterback. So if he plays well, they've got a chance to win the conference still.
Okay, coming up here in just a little bit, Scott Wright is going to join us to talk about Oklahoma State, his thoughts on Bedlam, and also what the Cowboys still have a sliver of hope to play for a Big 12 championship, but it's still there, and we'll talk about some other storylines from the Bedlam game and this week for Cowboy football. Jason Kersey is going to join us in just about 20 minutes to talk about the flip side and talk about the Sooners and their two upcoming games if he sees somebody as a potential trip up for Oklahoma. And specifically, we're obviously talking about West Virginia. And then Eric Horn's going to be with us a little bit later on the show to talk about Oklahoma City, the moves that they've made, the moves that are still out there for them, and his take on the rest of the NBA, too. So we are loaded the rest of the way. Jim Traber will be along at 2 o'clock this afternoon, so be sure and stay tuned for that. But right now, be sure and stay tuned. Listen during this break. Matt Ravis, it's Score for a Ford. He's going to tell you how you could be driving home in a brand new Ford F-250. So that's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. I'm Gideon Hamilton in for Mark Rogers and Dusty Dvorak, and you are listening to the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Sports Animal Flash.
This here, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. I'm Gideon Hamilton, and right now it is time for our Score for a Ford. Al Leshbeck is going to draw this a little bit later on in the week, but Richie has an opportunity here. Richie, we're going to go ahead and get your score for the Oklahoma-West Virginia game this weekend. What you got?
All right, I got OU 35. West Virginia 31.
Okay, 31. So
late letdown.
All right. After the emotional win last week, so a close game. OU still coming out on top. Richie, we appreciate it. Good luck, man.
All right, thanks.
All right, Richie trying to score for a Ford there, brand new Ford F-150. So he's got Oklahoma 35 and West Virginia 31. Going down to the wire. Okay. Coming up here in just a little bit, actually coming up here right now, we've got our good friend Scott Wright, does a great job covering Oklahoma State athletics for the Oklahoman. Scott, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, man, doing good.
I'm doing good. Hey, look, I wanted to fit this in the middle. I wanted to soften things up a little bit, but after all the time that we've known each other, I'm going to come after you finally. Shane Illingworth showed poise in the explain yourself, Scott.
He didn't show accuracy.
Yeah,
I'm admitting that.
Yeah,
but he didn't get rattled. He didn't lose control. He didn't start throwing the ball to the other team. I thought that that he handled himself well in the situation. He just didn't make the throws that he needed to make.
Yeah.
To move the offense.
Is there we're always impartial and nothing really bothers us or anything. But as somebody who's covered this team for a number of years now. Did you feel anything when OSU punts that ball on fourth down? Because you know the narrative around the game and the lack of success and some of the cautious play calling, so to speak. Did you know when that happened that was going to be a moment that sent a lot of people over the edge?
Oh, yeah. You knew what the Twitter reaction was going to be immediately and just what exactly that, like you said, that had had roots going back a long way in that game. So, you knew exactly what that was going to do to the fan base and how the reaction was going to be when he made that decision there in the fourth quarter.
What those are some of the things that fans can't take, decisions that don't lead to winning a game and also coming out flat, and they both happen in the same game against your most hated opponent, and so you can understand the emotion of that there. But was there something in this game plan? Players talked about it after the game. Gundy took a lot of blame after this game that they just didn't feel like they were put in the position to win. OU might be talented talented. I think they certainly are more talented now that Stevenson and Perkins have had their suspension run out and those guys are back out on the team. Those guys are tremendous talents, but it seemed like Oklahoma State, the defense settled down long enough to where if the Cowboys could get anything going offensively, that they might have had a chance to work back into the game. But it seemed just like from the jump, the game plan was a little bit off.
Yeah, it did. You know, they were hitting big plays with crossing routes, and that's something that that when you play man as much as Oklahoma State does, you're susceptible to, and felt like they weren't in position to handle those. The run game kept trying to get outside when they ran the ball, and that wasn't working. They couldn't get to the edge. Felt like that was something that was important to them and then just wasn't working. So, you know, Mike Gundy said yesterday that he felt like they maybe underestimated Oklahoma's talent in a couple of areas, and that that led to maybe some mistakes that were made in the game plan. So they were a little bit behind the eight ball and didn't even know it before they took the field, really.
Yeah. Then you add injury to insult here, and I guess one of the equipment managers here with this story, a lot of people have seen this this video with a scrum of OU fans trying to throw the football out of the stands, and he's trying to go back in and get it, and broke a rib or something like that. Now, this is an alleged assault, even though, you know, we've got some far away video of what's going right on, but what's the story here, Scott? I know you filed the story yesterday.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He was trying to get the ball, and they were trying to throw it out of the stadium, and there ends up being a big pileup. And a family member of his says that he was attacked and punched and had beer thrown on him, and the result was he ended up with a broken rib. So we'll see what exactly is going to happen from that. OU Police Department has taken over and they're handling the incident on behalf of the university, but definitely not a great situation, not a great result for somebody to get injured in a situation like that.
Scott Wright is our guest. Does a great job covering Oklahoma State athletics for the Oklahoman. We got Scott for a couple more minutes here. So, by the record, there's a chance that Oklahoma State can still work their way back in to the Big 12 championship game, as remote as that might be. Cowboy fans are certainly going to become big West Virginia fans over the next couple of weeks because they've got OU and Iowa State, a couple of teams that are also in that mix that they could potentially hand losses to. I say potentially, but there's still a chance here, Scott, and so Oklahoma State needs to take care of their business as well.
Yeah, that's the most important thing for Oklahoma State. Is you can't let this Bedlam loss linger, because Texas Tech is coming in off of a win and an open week, so you know that they're going to be as prepared as they can be, and obviously Oklahoma State should be more talented than them. It certainly seems that way right now, but if you are a step slow or not 100% mentally in the game, this is a Texas Tech team that can come out, and you know, Alan Bowman looked really, really good at the end of that last game they had. So it's a situation where Oklahoma State could slip up if they're not if the leadership of the team, the veterans on this team, don't have everybody's attention and have them in the right spot mentally and physically prepared.
When you talk to some of the coaches with other sports and administrators, I know you did a story on the women's basketball team. Obviously, men's basketball just about to get things underway. How much of a headache is this going to be for them, at least for the next few months, until a vaccine's released and things can hopefully get back to some sort of start to get to some sort of normalcy here? How wild is this going to be over the next 3 months as they try to get games in and things are sort of upended at the last minute, which I'm sure we're going to see plenty of?
Yeah, we're going to see even more in basketball than we have in football. It's going to be a really chaotic winter, I think, for the winter sports. You know, wrestling is only going to be allowed to compete on one day per week because they're considered an extreme contact sport. So so you're going to see probably some double headers for the wrestling teams and things like that. So that's going to be unique and very different for them. But basketball is sticking essentially to a typical schedule, and you're going to have a lot of cancellations and shuffling and movement. And it's just going to be a really challenging time to get through.
Yeah,
like a lot of this has.
No, no question about it. Scott, we appreciate your time. As always, keep up the great work for the Oklahoman, and hopefully we'll be able to get a chance to catch up with you again real soon.
Awesome. Sounds good, Gideon.
All right, that's Scott Wright. Does a fantastic job. Always great to see him in the press box. And you, everybody is so football-centric around here, but you think about, especially if your kid is involved in some kind of sport and this thing means everything to them, achieving whatever the highest level of that is. And, you know, you talk about wrestling, you talk about some of the fringe sports that are just going to be thrown into as much disarray as everything else, if not more so, just because you don't know how much more focus the university is going to put on those student athletes. You would hope everything to try to keep everybody safe, but it's just different into trying to participate in a revenue sport versus the others.
It's just about resources, right? And at the end of the day, there's only so many to go around. That's a tough deal. I don't know how you go about doing that, and I feel bad for people who are going to get the short end of the stick there because somebody is going to.
Yeah. The wrestling thing's wild, where they can only compete on one day. I mean, it makes sense, but that's going to be highly unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the reasoning for that? What did he say?
They're a high
contact sport like that.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay, so we've got some breaking NBA news, and we've seen some big deals this offseason in addition to some of the trades that we've witnessed. Donovan Mitchell with that gigantic deal with Utah, Jason Tatum with the Boston Celtics. And now we got another big one from somebody who made a big name for themselves to everybody in the NBA universe during the playoffs. Started as Hassan Whiteside's backup, basically, and then worked his way into somebody who was really interchangeable with everything that the Miami Heat did and helped lead them to a big amount of success this season, and then has the block and everything that really made people take notice of him. But he's an outstanding basketball player, and he is now being paid as one of the best basketball players as if he was in the NBA.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what that has to do moving forward.
Because and this is Bam Adebayo, by the way, I'm alluding to. Yeah,
Bam Adebayo, yeah, he's a tremendous player. If you watch them in the bubble, he's pretty essential to what they do. I'm curious what implications that has to their pursuit of Giannis Antetokounmpo next year in free agency. I would imagine that that's going to put a little bit of a dent in their cap number for next year. So I don't know that it necessarily rules out Giannis coming. They could do a lot of different things there, but good for him. Good for him. He's a really good player.
5 years, 163, and that has a trigger in it to where he could make as much as 5 years, 195. So those are big numbers for a guy that has just really burst onto the scene here over the last couple of years. And if you watched Miami closely, you knew he had an unusual skill set for somebody his size, particularly as a passer. He's a lot of fun to watch.
And the way he developed, the way he's gotten better each and every year, I mean, there's no reason to think that's going to stop next year. He's getting
better. Can you imagine if he takes the next step?
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's going to continue because he's taken some monumental leaps forward.
Now, no perimeter shot.
Right. That's something that he could continue to work on and do something there. I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out for him. He's just gotten so much better every year.
Did you see that a lot of teams are developing quote unquote dossiers on Giannis?
That's kind of gross. I think it's kind of.
It's not like they have lewd pictures of him or something.
What do they need to know about? Info. What do they need to know about Giannis's girlfriend? Look, if Giannis Antetokounmpo wants to come play on your basketball team, are you telling me just because of what you have in your dossier that you're not going to take him? Is that what they're saying?
She is an important voice in his Indeed. Life, and if you can appeal to her, she might be able to make that final appeal to him to send him over the top. And
I got you. Well, hey,
you never know.
He's wired differently. Obviously, his story, if you know anything about that, he's very much family first, basketball mm-hmm. second, and everything else kind of falls by the wayside.
Do you think he's going to stick around? Do you think it mainly depends on what happens this year? I don't know. Like, if they win a championship, how are you going to be able to keep that group in place with, I know with Bird, but they'd go stratospherically over the cap because of Middleton's deal and some of the guys that they would have to sign. I just don't know how that works. Even if they win a championship, he might say, okay, this is done. Now let me try somewhere else.
That's being in a small market for you. Sometimes you can do everything the exact right way and try to please your star, and you could still, at the end of the day, say, all right, see, I'm going to Miami or Toronto or wherever. I don't think it's going to be Miami now that Adebayo is signed, but it's possible. He was leaning last I heard, right? He was leaning towards signing the Supermax. At least that was a report. Maybe the Bogdanovich situation there, where that trade kind of fell apart, impacts that. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's that'll be one of the big stories of the afternoon anyway. Bam Adebayo, 5 years, $163 million, according to Sham Sarania. So you can mark it up. Coming up here in just a little bit, Jason Kersey is going to join us to talk about the Bedlam game from OU's standpoint, how they were able to burn it down, and now the Sooners looking like the favorite in the Big 12, at least to win the conference championship game. Still a lot of action remaining. We'll talk about how OU was able to turn things around and get in position to win another conference title. Eric Horn will join us later in the show to talk some Thunder basketball, so we've got a lot coming up for you. Thanks for sticking around. This is the Monsters of the Midday. I'm Gideon Hamilton, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Score for a Ford.
In just about half an hour, Jason Kersey will be coming on with us here in just a few minutes. Eric Horn a little bit later on the show, too. Jason is at the Lincoln Riley press conference, so that's why he's...
Yeah, Lincoln's running long today.
That's why he's not joining us here. A lot of stuff for him to talk about, I would imagine.
What would that be? Not like they had a big game over the weekend or anything. Yeah. I don't know what Lincoln could possibly have to talk about.
Yeah, they certainly did. Now, we know from Jason's reporting that earlier in this press conference, about an hour ago, that Lincoln Riley, I'm reading directly from Jason Kersey's Twitter feed, by the way, at Jason Kersey. Lincoln Riley, largely unprompted, just went on a long soliloquy about Bookie Radley Hiles, calling him arguably the best team player the Sooners have, and saying we will be a worse program the day he is not here. And so he is probably has to be the most defended player on the team because of some of the... How would you describe Bookie to somebody who's like an OSU fan or a Tulsa fan that's listening right now, doesn't watch OU play a lot?
Oh, undersized, obviously, makes some boneheaded plays, and likes to talk a lot, and sometimes that gets him in trouble as well.
Yeah, so, and based on some of those plays, which are glaring to the fan base, that makes him more of a frustrating player. And one of those happened in the OSU game where Oklahoma State doesn't convert on third down. He points at a guy, gets for an extended period
Failed
of time.
Him out. Failed
yeah,
him out. Yeah,
keeps the drive alive, and Oklahoma State got one of their few scores in that game.
All right, I think of, versus LSU last year, there was a hit where he just completely left his feet, Gideon, and obviously that's going to gets you disqualified, so it just puts you puts your team behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
So, by the way, great use of the word soliloquy right there. That's not often you use that on sports radio. So.
Well, I mean, we're not there, so we don't know. I know if he was talking for about 30 or 40 seconds, that doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if he was pontificating for quite some time, then we'll accept
Jason. Lincoln's not really a guy who just goes off on there's been one time recently where the marijuana subject or for suspending players. He went off a little bit on that, but usually he doesn't really go off on those tangents.
Yeah. So we'll find out a little bit more about that from Jason a little bit. But yeah, can Bookie be frustrating? Yes. Lincoln Riley, obviously a big fan there. So we'll get the take there. What are your thoughts on OU, the way that their season stands right now and the possibilities that they have in front of them?
Obviously, you took your lumps early, but you'd rather take your lumps early on than later. You want to see that upward trajectory, and that's what I've seen from Oklahoma. And I've heard you, Gideon, talk this week about getting those suspended players back. Well, that has certainly changed things for them.
And look, I know that I'm kind of beating the drum on that, and I do think that that is the most important thing that's happened for them. Mm-hmm. And also, they got some of their more difficult games in the conference out of the way. I would have been interested to see how they performed out of conference with a who were they set to play this year?
Army would have been one of the games.
Tennessee.
Tennessee would have been. Those would have been really tough games that early in the season.
Really?
Really tough games,
okay.
I think.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sort of... I don't know.
I just remember when that Tennessee game kind of got canceled. I mean, people were disappointed, but also there was a sigh of relief because they were not looking great at that point.
Yeah, well, Tennessee hasn't had a great,
great year
this year either. But anyway, my point is, I brought up those two guys to the point of, okay, geez, we get it. And it's not just because of these two guys. I think it is in large part, but also scheduling has something to do with it. And also, they've just gotten progressively better as the season's gone along and things have started working for them. So I wanted to tell that side of the story too.
But that's what you would expect from a team with a first year starter quarterback who is a freshman. That's what you would expect. So, and look, as far as Rattler goes, he's the best quarterback in the Big 12 already. He was after the first several weeks of the season. He just had to work through some things early that each and every freshman quarterback has to work through.
How good can he be, you think?
Can he
rise to the level of some of the quarterbacks that we've seen at Oklahoma? That's a tall order.
I think even above that. I mean, his arm talent, you just see the way that ball comes out of his hands, the way he's able to move his hips is Mahomes-like. So, yeah. And I'm not saying he's going to be Patrick Mahomes, but there are things that you see from him that make you go, my goodness.
That's an interesting point because of all the transfers, we didn't see a lot of these guys as freshmen. So we didn't see what they were going to look like, at least not here. And so we didn't see them go through some of the struggles and issues that, of course, they did go through at that time. They were a little bit more of a polished product
And a guy like Jalen Hurts, man, he was ready to go. You might remember him as a freshman at Alabama. He was really good away. And Saban obviously trusted him, and he doesn't trust a lot of freshman quarterbacks to come in and do that thing. But Spencer Rattler is a little bit different. He has a very high ceiling. But he also has a little bit of gambler in him. He has that Brett Favre in him where he's liable to throw the ball to the other team, and he's got to work through that stuff.
Speaking of Alabama, do you think that they're number one here? They were unanimous AP number one. Notre Dame got a couple of votes. Ohio State got one in the coaches' poll. But you think Alabama's a sure bet to be number one at least right now?
I think so. You think that's why Dabo was so mad that they couldn't play at Florida State? He just wanted to make that statement to where he could go and possibly be number one? I think that's why he was upset.
I don't know, but I do know we'll see some combination of Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Clemson. Some people think Clemson might be ahead of Notre Dame, even though they have a loss, and Ohio State does not, just because of the lack of sample size that we have seen and will see from Ohio State, at least until the Big Ten championship game.
I don't factor in, but even if that game happened against Florida State, come on, what does that really mean that you beat Florida State?
No, doesn't mean anything. Although I was excited when Florida State beat North Carolina earlier this season because I knew that bubble was going to pop at some point for North Carolina. I wanted to go ahead and have it be then. Texas A&M, Florida, Cincinnati, BYU, we talked about some of these themes a little bit earlier in the show, but the first college football playoff official rankings will be released later on tonight. So we've had to wait a long time for these, and I will be intrigued to see where teams like Cincinnati and BYU, both undefeated in the group of five conferences and outside of the Power Five, how they will be evaluated against some other teams that are in Power Five. Oregon, who's just starting their season, Miami with a loss, Northwestern undefeated, still lightly regarded, even though they've shot up the polls this week. Where some of those teams might be, of course, interested to see where the Big 12 teams will be, Oklahoma and Iowa State, each with the same record, even though Iowa State defeated Oklahoma. So does that mean the Cyclones will be ahead of the Sooners? Based on the history of the polls, no. Probably won't even be close, so you'll be way ahead of them, even though Iowa State beat them earlier this season. And is Oklahoma State going to be included in the top 25? Where's Tulsa going to be? Where are the Golden Hurricane going to be? As they're number 24 in the AP, 25 in the coaches. Tulsa's a great story this year, and they've been one of the more fun teams to watch just when you look at their games and how close and wild and exciting that they've been. How good is Tulsa? I don't know. But I think they're good enough based on some of the teams around them to where I think they'll be at the tail end of the first college football playoff rankings. And so that would be pretty cool. Okay, we're going to bring in our good friend Jason Kersey right now, fresh off of that Lincoln Riley press conference. Jason, thanks for being on. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing today,
Gil? I'm doing good, man. Soliloquy? So is he going on for a minute or two here about Buki? We read that on the Twitter feed, but he is the I categorized him as the Oklahoma player in most need of defending, and I guess Lincoln sort of went off on that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Buki is the most polarizing player in recent OU history, I think, maybe with the exception of Landry Jones, but I'm not even sure Landry elicited the kind of anger that Buki does at times. And so, the thing is, Buki does make some really poor decisions at times, and he gets very emotional and gets penalties. But the guy hasn't played that bad this year. I mean, he just hasn't. There's not been a whole lot of moments this year where he's not made a play that you thought he should make, or that he's been completely beaten on coverage when you think that he shouldn't. I mean, but today the question about penalties came up, and then Lincoln on his own interrupted the next questioner to add in that Buki was one of the best team players they have, and that the program will be worse off when he's gone. And I'm sure that that's going to make a lot of people pretty angry. But it's interesting because, I mean, the way that he polarizes OU fans is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's the nature of the penalties and plays. They're much more noticeable guys, you know, that pick up like a key holding penalty or something like that.
Well, and then on top of that is the hype that he came in with. I mean, we're talking about a five-star recruit. They don't sign very many of those, or they certainly didn't at that time on defense. Comes from California, got a big Instagram following. I mean, he just came in with a lot of hype. And, the fact that he hasn't, you know, I mean, I think the expectation was probably that this kid was going to be an All-American, and that's probably not going to happen, but he's also not a bad player.
Yeah, we've talked at length about the two guys coming back, Stevenson and Perkins, and how much of a difference that has made for Oklahoma. We've talked about the schedule lightening up a little bit for them. Obviously, that's a part of the reason why they've been able to find their footing a little bit. But part of this is they've just gotten better as the season's gone on, right, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, sure. But I do think those two guys have made a pretty significant difference. I mean, Stevenson in the running game alone. I mean, the running game has just been so different since he came back. Ronnie Perkins bolstered what was already a really good defensive front. Some of it is just they're getting better. I mean, Spencer Rattler being maybe the most prominent example of that, you know, getting benched at Texas and then coming back in and playing really well. And really he's played really, really well since then. So, this team had a lot of things to figure out throughout the year, and it certainly seems like they figured them out now, because if they play Oklahoma State in September or early October, they probably lose and maybe get beat badly. And now we're looking at a team that just crushed the team that was the Big 12 favorite. You know, Oklahoma State was on top of the conference, and Oklahoma didn't just beat them, they crushed them. And that comes after, you know, routing Kansas and Texas Tech, which we expected. But, I mean, they are starting to peak right now. And I think there's a million reasons for that. But Stevenson and Perkins are big parts of it, too.
Are they the overwhelming favorite to win a Big 12 championship game? Is there, I mean, West Virginia is a mild chance for a trip up here. I guess they could turn the ball over a lot or something could happen. But is there anybody that they could play in the Big 12 championship game that would be within, I don't know, 4 points or a touchdown of the line of OU? Or are they simply just an overwhelming favorite to win the conference again?
I think that they're probably the favorite now to win the conference, but I also think that if they end up playing Iowa State, that could be a tough game.
Okay.
Again, for them. I mean, they've already lost once to them, and Iowa State is playing really well. I mean, just absolutely throttled Kansas State last weekend. And and Breece Hall, in my opinion, should be in the Heisman conversation. Charlie Kohler is obviously a great player. I mean, they've got really good players up there, and I think OU would be the favorite, and I would probably pick OU to win an Iowa State rematch, but I don't know that I think that it's a slam dunk. But if they, but weirdly, I mean, if they played Texas, I don't think that game would be that as close mm-hmm. as it was last time. If they played Oklahoma State, we just saw what, you know, the gap between those two teams. There's not a chance they're going to end up playing Kansas State again because they've fallen so far. But they would absolutely crush Kansas State if they played them
a second time.
But Iowa State, I think, could still be interesting.
Okay. Jason Kersey from The Athletic. Now, of course, you cover Oklahoma closely, but did you know when Oklahoma State punted that ball early in the fourth quarter that Cowboys fans' heads were about to explode?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it seems like there are moments like that in a lot of years in Bedlam. It feels like Gundy sort of coaches that game conservatively sometimes, and that didn't make a lot of sense to me, and it still doesn't, even after hearing his explanation yesterday or the day before, whenever that was. I can't fathom not going for it on fourth down early in the fourth quarter when you're in OU territory and losing by three touchdowns. Like, that really felt like a surrender at that point. And then OU, you know, they pin OU on the one, and OU promptly goes 99 yards and puts the game away. So, I mean, absolutely. I knew Oklahoma State fans were going to be furious about that, and I think they have every right to be.
Jason, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for coming on right out, fresh out of that press conference. We appreciate that, and hopefully have a chance to catch up with you again real soon.
All right, thanks, Gideon.
You bet. Jason Kersey there from The Athletic, and definitely appreciate his time. Coming up next, another one of our favorites, Eric Horn, who does a great job and has for many years covering the Oklahoma City Thunder for The Athletic. Will join us, his thoughts on all the moves Oklahoma City has made and maybe some moves that they have yet to make. And Jim Traber coming up in just about 20 minutes as well. I'm Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty today. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Ravis here with me as well. He's done a great job putting together today's show on quick notice, and that's why we have to give a big thank you to Eric Horn from The Athletic. I'd shuffle Eric around from a time a little bit later on today. And Eric, we appreciate you being generous about that, and thanks for coming on, sharing your perspective with us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Gideon. How are you, man?
Hey, it's been a while. I wish we had something to talk about, but, you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, even today we got the Adebayo and Brandon Ingram maxes. Didn't you think it was going to be relatively quiet? At least some teams had trepidation about how, you know, the cap was going to work with the pandemic. And I thought the league did a really good job of keeping that relatively uniform and spacing that out, I guess, over a couple of seasons so it didn't really dynamically change everything. And, man, there's a ton of moves being made, signings and otherwise.
Yeah, it seems like every year before free agency we say, well, this isn't a good group.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's not a lot of money to go around, and the next thing you know, guys are getting deals. Yeah. I mean, it's not as much as it has been in previous years, but there's still surprises. You know, Gordon Hayward, Gallinari, who I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, every year teams find ways to spend money. I don't think it's been as reckless as previous years, but, you know, there's some stuff out there that kind of made your eyebrows raise a little bit.
Yeah. Eric Horn from The Athletic joins us, does a great job covering Thunder basketball. And we assumed at the beginning of last season that there were going to be a couple of bites out of the apple taken, that, you know, some guys would be moved at the deadline, and then that didn't happen. They tried with the Gallinari deal, fell through to Miami because of the years and everything. But after the season, that left Oklahoma City with the task of really starting this rebuild, and it happened relatively quickly, Eric, at least getting down to that floor to where they can build back from. I wondered the deals that you thought Oklahoma City got a great return on, and if there were any that sort of left you scratching your head.
I can't really say there's many that left me scratching my head necessarily. I mean, from an emotional standpoint, I guess, you know, people are a little bit kind of frustrated with the Steven Adams deal, but mm-hmm. I think you have to be realistic about where Steven Adams is in his career, and what you got for him, and frankly, like what's left to get from that deal.
Yeah.
You don't know what the end result is going to be in that deal. So I think it's important to remember to remind people that, you know, even when you see the Thunder receive this, this, and this, you know,
we don't know what this is yet. Yeah, yeah.
And some of these guys are barely here for a day or 48 hours before they're moved on to another team for something else. Mm-hmm. And for instance, Ricky Rubio or Kelly Oubre. So I think so far the Thunder are doing what they're supposed to do. I think that they're remaining disciplined. They're obviously prioritizing, you know, future first round pick assets and, you know, getting long term money off their books. I think the only contract that's big of significance that goes more than maybe a year that they have on their books right now is Al Horford. And we don't know what's going to happen with Al Horford.
Right.
So I think Sam Presti's sticking to his plan and he's staying disciplined in what's required of a rebuild in a small market.
Is there any way they can move that deal at some point this season, or is one of their objectives to make Al look like he can still, play the way that maybe he did a couple of years ago and still help a contending team somewhere on down the road, maybe next season?
Yeah, like I think it's kind of similar to the Chris Paul equation last year, where you know you try to talk to teams before the season starts, because remember Chris Paul, they were talking about Chris Paul to Miami before the season started last year. And if you don't find a deal that's suitable to how you have that player valued and what you expect to get from that player, then just bring him back. I think Chris Paul was unique in that he's a guy who, you know, can make your team better, and I think that Al Horford's the same way. You know, even though he's older, he's just such a good guy to have in your basketball culture that I don't think it's going to be damaging to have him come back and kind of rehabilitate a little bit in terms of his image and his value to other teams. So, and frankly, like they've got to be able to fill salary somehow. Like
they're
getting close to being to like a salary floor. So, they're going to have some big numbers on there, and I think you would rather have a number for a guy like Horford, who you know is going to be a quality guy in your locker room, is not going to, you know, come in and mess things up, as opposed to a couple of different guys who might be disgruntled that they're in the situation they're in.
Yeah, bad influence on Shea or somebody like that. Eric Horns, our guest from The Athletic, has done a great job for many years covering the Oklahoma City Thunder, a very valuable resource for us here. Do you need your own high pick for 2 years or more, or can they make this work out, secure a pretty high pick this year, take it, hit on it, or package it in some way, and then start to build the foundation moving forward? How much pain, quote unquote, do you anticipate there being, even though I think the fan base for the most part is bought in on the idea of a rebuild here, but how long do you think it takes in terms of needing to secure your own high pick?
I don't think that like Sam Presti would ever put a timeline on it. They don't like putting timelines on anything, whether it's injuries or rebuild.
Yeah.
But like I kind of look at it the way that, okay, think about the first go round, the way this went. You know, they had to be bad to get Kevin Durant. They were bad Kevin Durant's first year. They were bad the next year. That's at least 3 years of stockpiling, you know, pretty high picks or trading up to get into a position to where you can have that kind of pick or sending out a veteran to where they got like a guy like Jeff Green or something like that. So I'm thinking at the least you're going through at least 2 to 3 years. Now, the NBA is a lot different than it was maybe like a decade or 12 years ago in that These guys change their minds so quickly about where they want to be and what they want to do. So, and I'm just throwing this out there as a hypothetical. I know nothing about this situation. Atlanta, you know, going for it this year to kind of, in as many ways, kind of try to get ahead of what might happen with a guy like Trae Young. He's obviously all-star talent. I've gotten no indications that he's unhappy with being in Atlanta. But what if the situation arises in 2 to 3 years where all of a sudden you hear that Trae Young wants out of Atlanta in that situation? They haven't won enough. They haven't done enough. Then the Thunder are going to be one of these teams with all of these assets.
Right.
And suddenly you're looking at a situation where they're trying to get the best they can for a guy like Trae Young. So I think that we don't even know what the situation is going to be or what player is going to be available when that time comes around. But until then, I don't think Sam Presti's going to get impatient and say, hey, let's go get Karl Anthony Towns now. Like, that's not going to help you. Yeah. Like, you've got to start with the draft, and then you have to be opportunistic when certain players show that they want to be other places.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first. Eric Horn from The Athletic. Trae Young will be on the 2022 opening day roster. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course.
I should have mentioned somebody else.
Yeah. Like, yeah, people obvious. Actually.
Like, people are going like, to run with that.
People will latch onto that. No. We understand. From the heights of the NBA and trying to orchestrate a roster, can you, now I value your opinion almost more than anybody else's around the NBA, can you tell me what Charlotte was thinking with the Hayward signing?
It's really hard to get marquee guys in that market, in a lot of markets. It's hard to get guys in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're seeing the difference between the discipline in certain franchises and the discipline in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
I think Sam Presti is good at what he does because he knows that it's required to go through some difficulties to get to where you need to get to, especially in a small market. I don't think that's understood in Atlanta. I don't think that's understood in Charlotte. For as good of a player as Michael Jordan was, he's not a good executive. And yeah. Gordon Hayward could end up being a quality player for them, but to pay that much for a guy at that in that position and where he is in his career, I don't think that that's a prudent move. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works, but I think you're kind of seeing the differences between like competently run franchises and ones that aren't.
Fans in Chesapeake this year, or is that still ever-changing as numbers continue to rise around here?
I mean, it seems like it's going to happen. When they put out the statement a few weeks ago, it gave all the indications that that was going to be a thing that's going to happen on opening night. Mm-hmm. You know, you would hope the numbers improve between now and then.
Yeah.
To where that can still be a reality. I mean, to be frank, just from my personal opinion, I don't think there should be fans anywhere.
Right.
But you can't tell these owners otherwise. They're trying to recoup, you know, a big chunk of the losses from last season and try and get ahead of the losses that they're going to sustain this season. So, I mean, I think they'll have fans, and I couldn't even tell you whether or not they're going to have to, you know, pull back on that, whether or not they're going to expand it. I know the NFL has kind of done a tiered system where they start off with a few fans and then they some places, you know, let more and more in each week, but that's outdoors. That's completely different.
Right.
So, I don't have a lot of insight as to how that's going to go from the NBA standpoint.
Eric, we appreciate you switching things around for us today. Always very appreciative of your insight as well. Hopefully we have a chance to catch up with you again sometime before the season starts.
No problem, Gideon, anytime, man.
All right, Eric Horn there from The Athletic. And for people that I just need to hear somebody that they can identify here, David Moss, who was part of the Quick Change Act that they did at halftime, died of COVID-19. So, I mean, the more people that, that maybe set some people straight, I mean, you hope you would have heard enough by now, but he succumbed to this thing, and numbers are going the wrong way. So please be careful out there, especially with the pressure to travel this week. Thanksgiving, couple of days away. Want to thank all of our guests on this show today. That includes Kyle Boone from CBS, Scott Wright from the Oklahoman, Jason Kersey, and Eric Horn from The Athletic. And a big thank you to Matt Ravis for arranging all of those for us. Thank you so much for listening. Jim Traber is coming up next with the afternoon sports beat. You have been listening to the Monsters of Midday. Gideon Hamilton had so much fun. We'll do it again tomorrow. Join Craig Humphreys at 11. Take you all the way until 2 when we hand the baton to Jim. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everyone. See ya.
Sports Animal Flashback.